Chapter 32. With vine leaves, backed by a low band of somber crimson in the west, the voice of the old ex-officer in the army of the princes sounded collected, punctiliously civil. Do I dream? Is this a pleasantry? Or am I to understand that you have been hatching an affair of honor for 16 years? It has clung to me for that length of time. That is my precise meaning. The quarrel itself is not to be explained easily. We met on the ground several times during that time, of course. What manners! What horrible perversion of manliness! Nothing can account for such inhumanity but the sanguinary madness of the revolution which has tainted a whole generation, mused the returned emigre in a low tone. W, who's your adversary? He asked a little louder. My adversary? His name is Farod. Shadowy in his tricorn and old-fashioned clothes, like a bowed, thin ghost of the Ancien regime, the chief liar voiced a ghostly memory. I can remember the feud about little Sophie Derville, between Monsieur de Brissac, captain in the bodyguards, and Danjorand, not the pockmarked one, the other the beau Danjorand, as they called him. They met 3 times in 18 months, in a most gallant manner. It was the fault of that little Sophie too, who would keep on playing. This is nothing of the kind, interrupted General Dubert. He laughed a little sardonically. Not at all so simple, he added. And nor yet half so reasonable, he finished, inaudibly, between his teeth, and ground them with rage. After this sound nothing troubled the silence for a long time, till the chevalier asked, without animation, what is he, this Farod? Lieutenant of Hussars, too, I mean, he's a general. A Gascon. Son of a blacksmith, I believe. There. I thought so. That Bonaparte had a special predilection for the canal. I don't mean this for you, Dubert. You are one of us, though you have served this usurper, who? Let's leave him out of this, broke in General Dubert. The chevalier shrugged his peaked shoulders. F. Farod of sorts. Offspring of a blacksmith and some village troll. See what comes of mixing yourself up with that sort of people. You have made shoes yourself, chevalier. Yes. But I am not the son of a shoemaker. Neither are you, Monsieur Dubert. You and I have something that your Bonaparte's princes, dukes, and marshals have not, because there's no power on earth that could give it to them, retorted the emigre, with the rising animation of a man who has got hold of a hopeful argument. Those people don't exist, all these Farods. Farod. What is Farod? A von Upitz disguised into a general by a Corsican adventurer masquerading as an emperor. There is no earthly reason for a Dubert to sanguinate by a duel with a person of that sort. You can make your excuses to him perfectly well. And if the maintenant takes into his head to decline them, you may simply refuse to meet him. You say I may do that? I do. With the clearest conscience. Monsieur le Chevalier. To what do you think you have returned from your emigration? This was said in such a startling tone that the old man raised sharply his bowed head, glimmering silvery white under the points of the little tricorn. For a time he made no sound. God knows, he said at last, pointing with a slow and grave gesture at a tall roadside cross mounted on a block of stone, and stretching its arms of forged iron all black against the darkening red band in the sky, God knows, if it were not for this emblem, which I remember seeing on this spot as a child, I would wonder to what we who remained faithful to God and our King have returned. The very voices of the people have changed. Yes, it is a changed France, said General Dubert. He seemed to have regained his calm. His tone was slightly ironic. Therefore I cannot take your advice. Besides, how is one to refuse to be bitten by a dog that means to bite? It's impracticable. Take my word for it, Farod isn't a man to be stayed by Apollo Geyser refusals. But there are other ways. I could, for instance, send a messenger with a word to the brigadier of the gendarmerie in Senlac. he and his two friends are liable to arrest on my simple order. It would make some talk in the army, both the organized and the disbanded, especially the disbanded. All canaille. All once upon a time the companions in arms of Armand Dubert. But what need a Dubert care what people that don't exist may think? Or, better still, I might get my brother-in-law to send for the mayor of the village and give him a hint. No more would be needed to get the three brigands set upon with flails and pitchforks and hunted into some nice, deep, wet ditch and nobody the wiser. It has been done only 10 miles from here to three poor devils of the disbanded Red Lancers of the Guard going to their homes. What says your conscience, Chevalier? Can a Dubert do that thing to three men who do not exist? A few stars had come out on the blue obscurity, clear as crystal, of the sky. The dry, thin voice of the Chevalier spoke harshly, "Colin, why are you telling me all this?" The General seized the withered old hand with a strong grip. "Be because I owe you my fullest confidence. Who could tell a deal but you? You understand why I dare not trust my brother-in-law, nor yet my own sister. Chevalier, I have been so near doing these things that I tremble yet. You don't know how terrible this duel appears to me, and there's no escape from it." He murmured after a pause, "It's a fatality," dropped the Chevalier's passive hand, and said in his ordinary conversational voice, "I shall have to go without seconds. If it is my lot to remain on the ground, you at least will know all that can be made known of this affair." The shadowy ghost of the Ancien regime seemed to have become more bowed during the conversation. "How am I to keep an indifferent face this evening before these two women?" he groaned. "General, I find it very difficult to forgive you." General D. Hubert made no answer. "Is your cause good, at least?" "I am innocent." This time he seized the Chevalier's ghostly arm above the elbow and gave it a mighty squeeze. I must kill him," he hissed, and opening his hand strode away down the road. The delicate attentions of his adoring sister had secured for the General perfect liberty of movement in the house, where he was a guest. He had even his own entrance through a small door in one corner of the orangery. Thus he was not exposed, that evening, to the necessity of dissembling his agitation before the calm ignorance of the other inmates. He was glad of it. It seemed to him that, if he had to open his lips, he would break out into horrible and aimless imprecations, start breaking furniture, smashing china and glass. From the moment he opened the private door, and while ascending the 28 steps of a winding staircase, giving access to the corridor on which his room opened, he went through a horrible and humiliating scene in which an infuriated madman with bloodshot eyes and a foaming mouth played inconceivable havoc with everything inanimate that may be found in a well-appointed dining room. When he opened the door of his apartment, the fit was over, and his bodily fatigue was so great that he had to catch at the backs of the chairs while crossing the room, to reach a low and broad divan on which he let himself fall heavily. His moral prostration was still greater. That brutality of feeling which he had known only when charging the enemy, saber in hand, amazed this man of 40, who did not recognize in it the instinctive fury of his menaced passion. But in his mental and bodily exhaustion this passion got cleared, distilled, refined into a sentiment of melancholy despair at having, perhaps, to die before he had taught this beautiful girl to love him. That night, General Dubert stretched out on his back with his hands over his eyes, or lying on his breast with his face buried in a cushion, made the full pilgrimage of emotions. Nauseating disgust at the absurdity of the situation, doubt of his own fitness to conduct his existence, and mistrust of his best sentiments, for what the devil did he want to go to Fouch for? He knew them all in turn. I am an idiot, neither more nor less, he thought, sensitive idiot. Because I overheard two men talking in a cafe. I am an idiot afraid of lies, whereas in life it is only truth that matters. Several times he got up, and, walking in his socks in order not to be heard by anybody downstairs, drank all the water he could find in the dark. And he tasted the torments of jealousy too. She would marry somebody else. His very soul writhed. The tenacity of that Ferod, the awful persistence of that imbecile brute, came to him with the tremendous force of a relentless destiny. General Huber trembled as he put down the empty water ewer. H. He will have me, he thought. General Hubert was tasting every emotion that life has to give. He had in his dry mouth the faint sickly flavor of fear, not the excusable fear before a young girl's candid and amused glance, but the fear of death and the honorable man's fear of cowardice. But if true courage consists in going out to meet an odious danger from which our body, soul, and heart recoil together, General Hubert had the opportunity to practice it for the first time in his life. He had charged exultingly at batteries and at infantry squares, and ridden with messages through a hail of bullets without thinking anything about it. His business now was to sneak out unheard, at break of day, to an obscure and revolting death. General Hubert never hesitated. He carried two pistols in a leather bag which he slung over his shoulder. Before he had crossed the garden his mouth was dry again. He picked two oranges. It was only after shutting the gate after him that he felt a slight faintness. He staggered on, disregarding it, and after going a few yards regained the command of his legs. In the colorless and pellucid dawn the wood of pines detached its columns of trunks and its dark green canopy very clearly against the rocks of the gray hillside. He kept his eyes fixed on it steadily, and sucked at an orange as he walked. That temperamental good-humored coolness in the face of danger which had made him an officer liked by his men and appreciated by his superiors, was gradually asserting itself. It was like going into battle. Arriving at the edge of the wood he sat down on a boulder, holding the other orange in his hand, and reproached himself for coming so ridiculously early on the ground. Before very long, however, he heard the swishing of bushes, footsteps on the hard ground, and the sounds of a disjointed loud conversation. A voice somewhere behind him said boastfully, "He's game for my bag." He thought to himself, "Here they are. What's this about game? Are they talking of me?" And becoming aware of the other orange in his hand, he thought further, "These are very good oranges. Leonie's own tree. I may just as well eat this orange now instead of flinging it away." Emerging from a wilderness of rocks and bushes, General Ferod and his seconds discovered General Hubert engaged in peeling the orange. They stood still, waiting till he looked up. Then the seconds raised their hats, while General Ferod, putting his hands behind his back, walked aside a little way. "I am compelled to ask one of you, messieurs, to act for me. I have brought no friends. Will you?" The one-eyed cuirassier said judicially, "That cannot be refused." The other veteran remarked, "It's awkward all the same." Owing to the state of the people's minds in this part of the country there was no one I could trust safely with the object of your presence here, explained General Hubert, urbanely. They saluted, looked round, and remarked both together, "Poor ground. It's unfit. Why bother about ground, measurements, and so on? Let us simplify matters. Load the two pairs of pistols. I will take those of General Ferod, and let him take mine. Or, better still, let us take a mixed pair. One of each pair. Then let us go into the wood and shoot at sight, while you remain outside. We did not come here for ceremonies, but for war to the death. Any ground is good enough for that. If I fall, you must leave me where I lie and clear out. It wouldn't be healthy for you to be found hanging about here after that." Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.